Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Sunday, January 25. I'm Carolyn Baker, and we're so glad that you can be with us tonight. We thank you so much for joining us as we continue offering lifeboats, along with options for not only surviving, but thriving in turbulent times. On this show, we do not avoid talking about the dire predicament of our planet, and we don't mislead people by stating that if we just do these 5 or 10 things, everything will be fine. Instead, we assume that nothing will be fine as humans continue to strive for infinite growth on a finite planet. What we do offer here are ways to find meaning and purpose amid the seemingly endless tragedies that we sit in the middle of. So tonight, we'll be exploring more options for doing this. But before we begin our conversation with our guest, I'd like to let you know that our guest next week will be Charles Eisenstein. Many of you know Charles as the author of a phenomenal book called The Ascent of Humanity, as well as Sacred Economics and his most recent book, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. Many of you have probably heard Charles in person or you've watched his many videos online. As you know, his message is neither optimistic nor pessimistic, but comes from that space in between opposites, the space that our guest tonight is going to talk about. So please join us next week as Charles Eisenstein comes to the Lifeboat Hour for the first time. Now, because this is the Lifeboat Hour, I need to mention a headline that was all over mainstream news yesterday. Maybe you saw it. Doomsday clock ticks forward. Climate change, nuclear weapons push humanity closer toward global catastrophe. And here's an excerpt from the story that was found on the Common Dreams website yesterday. Quote, "The clock is now registering 3 minutes to midnight. Runaway climate change and the ongoing threat of nuclear weapons have pushed the world closer toward irreversible catastrophe," the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists announced Thursday as the group pushed the symbolic doomsday clock forward to 3 minutes before midnight. Two factors pose extraordinary and undeniable threats to the continued existence of humanity, said the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, which came to its assessment with its board sponsors, which includes 18 Nobel laureates. World leaders have failed to act with the speed or on the scale required to protect citizens from potential catastrophe. These failures of political leadership endanger every person on Earth. Unquote. So once again, we are reminded in the most glaring and definitive language of our predicament on this planet. This isn't me or some other doomer saying these things. This is peer-reviewed science and 18 Nobel laureates. Now, this show on one level is designed to disturb, but it's also designed to create lifeboats. And tonight we're going to focus on a specific lifeboat that I believe is vitally important to us as we navigate turbulent times and constantly encounter endings and beginnings. The tool I'm talking about, and that Mike talked about a great deal on this show when he was still with us, is ritual. Now, a lot of people freak out at this word and associate it with religion, which it is not. Human beings were doing rituals long before any religions were created. And in fact, religions have borrowed or stolen rituals from non-religious groups all over the world. Tonight, we're going to learn more about ritual and how it can support us as we navigate the collapse of societies and the collapse of ecosystems, and not only help us, but other species that are suffering and going extinct. So our guest tonight is Maria Owl Gutierrez. Maria is an eclectic mix of clairvoyant, medium, spiritual counselor, energy healer, writer, teacher, and visionary of sustainable cultural practices. Her gift is being a bridge person and guide, accessing healing energies for transformation. Much of Maria's influence and inspiration on her path comes from her dear friendships with Indigenous elders and families from around the world and her deep, loving connections with her ancestors and spiritual guides. Maria is the founder and director at Sacred Future, a school for the transformation of consciousness and culture, where she heads up the certification program in nature therapy and rites of passage facilitation. Maria is currently a professor and dean of students at Energy Medicine University, a cutting-edge international university offering courses toward MS and PhD degrees. Maria received her MA from the California Institute of Integral Studies in Integral Counseling Psychology, and she received her BA from New College of California in Sustainable Community and Group Processes. Her website is mariaowl.com. That's spelled www.mariaowl.com. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Maria.
Thank you, Carolyn.
It's good to have you here. And I'm wondering, first of all, if you could tell us a bit about your own story and how you came to do this work. I'll be asking you to explain more about that work itself. Excuse me. But I think it's very important to know much more about who you are and how your life experiences led you to do what you're now doing.
Yes, thank you. You know, my life experiences included being a multiracial woman with Indigenous ancestry that I had to dig for and discover for myself. And that came in my later 20s and 30s. I actually credit ritual and sacred ceremony for saving my life in my 20s. I came from a background of a tumultuous family life with a very dominant kind of tyrant sociopathic father who was violent and alcoholic. And I really grew up in a place of not knowing where I belonged. When you have that kind of shattering at a young age with trauma and with the chronic incidences that create that level of post-traumatic stress in a child, through my 20s even, you grow up, I grew up really lost in the universe. I had a connection with spirit because I actually went to Catholic school for 8 years. And though I wasn't baptized Catholic, so I didn't actually have to go through confirmation and confession and things like that, but I did love learning about Jesus and his teachings. And growing up, I think that a combination of having that relationship to spirit is part of what saved me. And the other part was going into my 20s and beginning my spiritual seeking for healthy family. I knew that healthy family had to exist somewhere. Healthy leadership. My father was also an affluent business owner. So my experience of leadership was really about witnessing the misuse of power to extremes, you know, financial abuse and praising and shaming employees and, of course, his family. And so I needed to find, I was on this inner drive. I couldn't even put words to it, to find healthy family and healthy community, healthy leadership from a young age. And what I found myself in circles of Native teachers and Native traditions. And so in my 20s, I actually was initiated onto my first Indigenous traditional path as a wisdom keeper and pipe carrier in the Red Road. And I also was adopted by a Hopi family from Second Mesa, Arizona, who are still my dear friends and family. And as my life went on, I experienced a lot of different Native teachers who helped me to find who I was. But though these were spiritual circles and educational circles, you know, even at university, educational circles, I kept on attracting re-traumatizing experiences to myself because my initial original patterning of community and family was so dysfunctional. There was something in me that was reaching to heal that inside myself, in my psyche, to find my place of belonging. And so I kept repeating, you know, attracting very narcissistic leaders into my life and teachers. And finally, through the decades, I did also find some absolute gems of teachers. And I'm so blessed that I had these elders in my life as well. And so what I found is that my life, now that I'm in my 40s, I look back and I'm like, wow, my life has really been the study of power and the misuse of power. And it really catalyzed me into finding my voice and finding a very deeply rooted sense of discernment and understanding of energy and how really it is this weakness in humanity that we're so seduced by power, whether it's money, you know, gets us power, or it's a spiritual path that gets us power. This power over, this domination kind of conquering, you know, attitude, behavior. And it takes incredible amounts of commitment and work and determination as a human being to transform those, you could call them lower drives, you know, to transform them into wisdom, to make mistakes, admit your mistakes, want to strive to be someone who walks in integrity and in balance and interconnected with all of creation, you know, and to actually become a healthy adult. There aren't that many healthy adults on the planet right now. There are a lot of adolescent, you know, in adult bodies walking around who are still very young in their psyche and emotions. We see this everywhere. And we need, you know, I've committed my life to creating communities where transformation, deep transformation can happen. So we can become the elders that this planet needs right now, that our children and grandchildren need. People that they can emulate and be proud of.
That's beautiful, Maria. And so, you know, some people who are listening to this show may have very confused ideas about ritual and ceremony. Our culture is steeped, as you know, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, which is very different ideas about these, about the topic of ritual than indigenous people do. And I know that when I use the word ritual, some people freak out and want to run the other way because of their associations with it in the past. And in those cases, I like to explain that the deeper meaning of the word ritual is to fit together. And so I explain that in a broken world, ritual helps us fit together and restore wholeness. And there are some very basic assumptions that indigenous ritual and ceremony are based on. So please talk to us about those assumptions and how we can demystify ritual and ceremony and know when and why they are used.
Yes, absolutely. You know, as human beings, as I was saying before, we have a propensity to lose our way when we don't have community, healthy community, and mirroring, reflection. And we don't know where to look to receive that. So we can get lost pretty easily in our modern industrialized society. Ritual, earth-based ritual and ceremony is literally a tool and a vehicle, a technology that brings us home. Brings us home to the land, nature, brings us home to healthy community. It has that ability. And it also brings us home to our identity in the vaster cosmos. It helps us to know our place in the cosmos. And so ritual is this technology that indigenous peoples, our own indigenous ancestors, have been using for millennia to constantly renew our commitment and that humble acknowledging of interconnection with all life, that we are sharing this world with billions of non-human relatives who have an equal right to be here and thrive and express their true nature. You know, the meadow larks, the steelhead trout, the grasshoppers, we all are relatives. We're all connected. We're all part of a larger body. I love how Joanna Macy teaches that, eco-philosopher, amazing elder, Joanna Macy, one of my mentors, teaches us that we're all related, we're all interconnected, and we need each other to stay on course, to not get lost and wander off. And really, it's human beings who are the ones who wander off, and nature's constantly there for us, helping us to remember. I'd like to talk a little bit more about nature, if that's okay right now, and the importance of nature.
Yes, by all means.
So I believe that we are always being offered opportunities to become whole. And our purpose here on Earth, this human journey we're on, is about finding ourselves again, our true forms, our true minds and hearts. Some people call that coming back to our indigenous mind. Native people would call it just being a real human being. And maybe you've heard this before, but when you translate the word for, you know, many Native tribes have a tribal name like Lakota, right, Mayan, and almost all of them translate to the people or the human beings. And it's really to acknowledge that, you know, we are the two-legged people, you know, and those are the, you know, trees, the tree nation, the tree people, and those are the squirrel people, and those are the wolf people, and the buffalo people, et cetera. We're part of this larger community. And through ceremony, we get to learn that we are indeed not broken. So I'm talking about we modern folks who live in this very dysfunctional kind of shadow patriarchy that's on the earth right now. We have opportunities in every moment to remember who we are and that we are not broken. We are not toxic, and ceremony can help us remember that. And we are actually part of an intricate system within systems, of intelligence and beauty. And so when we start to connect with nature, we start to reconnect with nature, we begin to experience her medicine touching us in the ways that we most need this intervention. It's quite miraculous, really. Nature is constantly flowing rivers of energy in and through everything on Earth. Nature is an expression of the life force of the planet. Just as our physical constitution, our human physical constitution and complexion, shows our expression of our personal health and life force. And so nature, you know, when it's flourishing and it's vibrant and lush, is the face of Gaia's, you could say, health and healthy constitution. When we see devastated landscapes, raped and pillaged, you see a very sickened complexion of the earth and nature, right? So we know it's very out of balance and needs replenishing and health. So when we approach nature, she will immediately, in her way, diagnose and heal us of the imbalances in our energy system that are at the root of our surface symptoms, you know, such as, you know, whatever physical ailments that we might be suffering from. So nature has this incredible way of being able, without, you know, having to explain anything, like diagnosis and healing. Here you go.
Right.
And if we spend enough time in nature, we'll begin feeling an incredible sense of balance and well-being. But there comes a point, and this is what I really impress upon my students, there comes a point where we have to go beyond a little bit further, you know, beyond that relationship of nature as something other than ourselves that can heal us. Nature as something that we go to take medicine from, right, to help us heal, and, you know, to lift our spirits, you know, oh, this is sitting at this view or going to the ocean. And there's something very important in those relationships that form when nature is our healer and our friend. But I push my students to take it a step further and identify that they themselves are nature. That nature and we are one. That we are a vital part of the ecosystem, just as a tree is, just as the blackberry vines are, etc. And so we can't see nature permanently as an outside healer or medicine for us to partake of, and then we feel better. We need to go beyond that. We need to start remembering that we are nature. And so this is a very deep level of homecoming that must be embodied at some point down the road on our human journey, eventually and inevitably. And it's you know, the news headline that you've read, when I heard that as you opened the show, this is what was highlighted in my mind. You know, like, how far off of that path that we have gotten of knowing that we are nature. There is, yes, no way we would treat the earth in the way we've treated her if we understood that. And indigenous cultures, our ancestors, and many indigenous tribes on the planet still today have not lost this integral understanding of who they are and the true original instructions of being a human being.
Absolutely. And I love to just, you know, and anytime I hear this indigenous perspective, it just transports me. I love it because it's so refreshing to hear. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to hear a song. But first, one of the realities of ritual that I know you're familiar with is the way in which our indigenous ancestors and many indigenous people today use ritual to maintain healthy, resilient communities living in the wholeness of life. So how does ritual support the community?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my time spent with many different indigenous cultures, I've had the great honor of learning from over 10 teachers from 10 different villages around the world. And in that, what I've seen over and over again is that the value, the incredible value put on community ritual and ceremony to keep the community resilient and psychologically sane, and that there's never just one ritual. You know, there's a calendar, a ceremonial calendar that is followed year after year after year after year, passed down from the elders to the youth. And that there are specialized ritual specialists in every clan that hold the knowledge of very specific rituals, that each ritual having a very specific medicine for the larger community. And so these ritual specialists will have their apprentices, you know, the youth coming behind them. And eventually they'll pass on the torch of being the chief of that ritual. And so it will go on through the generations as a resource so that that community can stay healthy. And so, you know, the rituals that I participated in and that I've witnessed and read about and studied about, you know, these are all have their specific purpose and season in the calendar, in the year calendar. And there are certain ones that are, you know, so important, like the world renewal ceremonies that happen around summer solstice time. and the ceremonies that happen in, you know, like Thanksgiving time, the harvest ceremonies. This time of year in California, in another couple months, we're going to see the Strawberry Festival with the Native Pomo and Miwok people. So these things that give thanks to that which sustains life and keeps those relationships alive, sacred, and healthy. Then we also see ritual that is almost like the ritual leaders carry around like a medicine bag. And when a ritual is needed, they pull out that ritual and implement it within the community. So, for example, there are tribes, many tribes, that would work with dreams and nightmares. And when somebody in the village would have a very disturbing nightmare, so that that person actually was so impacted by that nightmare that they weren't able to participate to their fullness of the community, then the whole village would gather, and the one who carried the understanding of dreams would come forward and lead the community in a healing ritual for that person and re-dramatize, like reenact the nightmare. You know, if the woman fell off a horse, they'd get a horse, put her on it, have her fall off of it, you know. And this would help her to integrate that nightmare. So whoever had that dream, it is a way of being witnessed, and a deeper understanding from the collective wisdom of the village would come through and arise within the container of the larger community, which includes nature and animals and everything. So, and so we have these very specific rituals that could be pulled out. And grief ritual is one of those. And grief ritual is not, I think it's one of those that kind of spans both of those categories I just mentioned. It is something that needs to happen annually. It's also something that can be pulled out when it's needed, when there is a devastating event that happens in a community. Here in Santa Rosa, we had the horrible event of the shooting of Andy Lopez, and there's been tremendous upheaval in the Roseland community here, and between the police and especially the youth being so angry. And what did the community do? They held a ritual. They did a pilgrimage through the streets praying. They reached for deeper resources in nature and spirit. They knew that this was going to help them integrate and heal. And it's been an incredible ongoing resource for them.
Well, on that note, no play on words intended. On that note, we're going to hear a song. And it fits right in with everything that Maria is talking about right now. This is a song by Native American flutist Carlos Nakai entitled "The Shaman's Call." Let's listen.
Thank you.
That was Shaman's Call with Native American flutist Carlos Nakai, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. We're talking with Maria Owl Gutierrez from Northern California, who is a shaman, healer, professor, and founder and director of Sacred Future. You can contact her by going to her website, which is www.mariaowl, that's MARIAOWL.com. So, Maria, on the one hand, ritual has huge benefits for the community, but I'd like to hear more about how ritual benefits the individual. You talk about vision quests, initiation ceremonies, and grief rituals, and I know that you worked closely with Frances Weller, who's been on this show twice, and whose work and mine are very similar in terms of grief rituals. Please tell us more about individual rituals and how they serve people.
Yeah, I actually heard two different questions in that question, and one was, how does the individual benefit from community ritual, such as an initiation ritual, vision quest, grief ritual? And then I heard, how does an individual benefit from individual ritual, you know,
right.
when we can just go out on the land or in our yard or in our living room, and we can, you know, write down the things that are troubling us and put them in the wood-burning stove, watch them burn up. You know, this is a personal releasing ritual, that kind of thing. And both are incredibly empowering and help us to come back home to ourselves. Ritual is used for that purpose, to bring us back home, to help us re-engage our hearts and re-engage in deeper relationship and respect for ourselves and others, including nature. And so that's the that's the kind of overall way that anybody benefits, because it melts us. Any way that our ego tends to buffer us and defend us from the world, you know, the insecurities that rise up in us, and we defend ourselves, and it's all this kind of ego's way of isolating and being special or whatever it is, you know. Ritual helps that to melt and reminds us through a visceral felt sense of our inner connection with each other and nature and the earth. And so when we talk about, I would like to talk specifically about trauma, because that's my background, and this is how I credit community ritual for saving my life. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder from my childhood, but also there's a lot of incredible information coming out from the studies done on war veterans coming home. And I actually have heard stories from back during, Vietnam. And now there is more research being done on the effect of earth-based ritual and ceremony helping soldiers coming home from Afghanistan. And what we're seeing is that those veterans who are Native American or not, but who come home from a war situation where they have experienced severe trauma, and they come home, when they go straight into a community where there is earth-based ritual happening that acknowledges them for what they went through, that welcomes them home, that puts them through a rite of passage to mark what they went through as sacred and recognized by the community. You know, you went through this. We see you. We see how broken you feel by what you went through. We witness you. We also see your strength. We also see you can transform your pain into deep wisdom and gifts for the community. And that kind of witnessing is profound.
Yes, it is.
And we're seeing
yes.
veterans being coming from these ceremonies and having absolutely zero post-traumatic stress, right? Like, they don't get diagnosed with PTSD. Whereas the study also shows that veterans that come home and they go straight to the resources that the VA has to offer, you know, maybe group therapy, pharmaceuticals, they do develop PTSD. They get some benefit, but, you know, it's just not enough. It's not truly what their soul needs to come home and land back in their body in present time, here and now. You know, the community or the modern culture today tends to send this message that, you know, you were valuable to us when you were in one piece, and we could use you for our ends, and we sent you out and you did your job, and oh, but now you're broken and we can't use you anymore. So you're kind of like, you know, where can we shuffle you off to? So you're not in the way. And there's such a high suicide rate, as we know, among veterans coming home. And so this is just a really clear example of how ritual and earth-based ceremony can absolutely change lives.
I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but Michael Mead at mosaicvoices.org has wonderful rituals for returning veterans, which does this, and that's the specific intention. And then there's another guy named Ed Tick, T-I-C-K, who has a program that does the same thing. And you're absolutely right. The statistics for the healing of PTSD by doing this when these returning veterans come back is really quite profound.
Yes, I've seen both of those two men elders speak, and it's just, their work is phenomenal. I'm so grateful to them. But we also, like, my own experience has been leading ritual for women who have gone through miscarriage, women with infertility, you know, people just in my community who have gone through tremendous pain. Maybe they've just had memories come back of sexual abuse. You know, maybe they've just had the courage to leave a domestic violence situation. You know, and so I feel so incredibly blessed that my community recognizes me as a cultural ritual specialist. They know they can call on me, and I will gather the community. I will, you know, they've called a ritual. Okay, let's gather the community. What do you need? You know, and they bullet point, 1, 2, 3. I need a cleansing. I need to feel like I'm washing away what the pain and the suffering. I need to be witnessed telling my story, and I need to be welcomed home. Of course you do. Yes. So, and within that, we're going to gather the community and then create something for you to experience, to go through, like a journey, a rite of passage, you know, where you cross a threshold into the liminal realm, where you're in the spirit realm, and then you cross a threshold back from that spirit realm with medicine to bring to the people from your experience, and you're welcomed home by the community. And that is deeply transformative. It changes lives, and the transformation can absolutely be permanent. You know, people often don't regress back unless they choose to, you know. I also want to emphasize that ritual, the importance of ritual is that it fosters that ongoing relationship with the invisible world.
Yes.
And this is really what ritual is, what it's a vehicle and a technology for. It is a spiritual platform for human beings in bodies in this material world to continue a healthy engagement with the invisible world, the mystery, the unknown, that we are also an integral part of. And we need to not forget that. And so as a ritual leader, when I open a ritual space, I need to know what I'm doing, because when you invoke the invisible world, when you invoke the helpers, the guides from that world to come in affect our world, to intervene, to transmit information and healing energy. It happens, right? This intervention happens. And we need to make sure as ritual leaders that we are holding a very, very high integrity space for this transformational work to happen. We need to know how to navigate between those worlds. And so there are very simple basic rituals that we can do individually that you really aren't playing with fire so much. But then they're really ritual work. You need to know what you're doing, because a lot of harm can come when you don't. And I've been in many circles where I got re-traumatized, where I felt burned, where I felt dropped, where, you know, et cetera, where I saw that the ritual leader was very much more of an actor on a stage than an actual shaman who could hold that space with the purpose of serving.
I'd like to ask you about that, because over the years I've heard some horror stories from you and from other people about how people have gotten burned or harmed in some ways, particularly psychologically, by people that were unskilled in doing ritual. And I'd like you to share some of your own experiences with that and talk about how we can learn to do ritual skillfully, not relying on our own efforts entirely, but by being conduits of a greater wisdom.
Absolutely, yeah. So as I was saying, like it's just I can't state it enough, like how important it is to know what you're doing. And you know, in our ancestors had the great benefit of having these ritual specialists who could train the youth in how to hold that space. So from a very young age, there are initiation and rites of passage ceremonies for the young people becoming adults, coming into more responsibility. We don't have that in our modern world today. We need to create those things for our children and for each other as we step into who we want to be, you know, who our soul is. The blueprint our soul has for us, who our potential, what we can become, you know, the healthy, whole human being. And so in order to create and reclaim and bring back these important rituals, such as initiation rites and vision quest and the grief ritual, we need to seek out in the storehouses of earth-based wisdom held in our indigenous communities, you know, can we be good students? Can we learn how to do these ceremonies and then how to adapt them for the modern kind of westernized, industrialized culture? You know, because we have different needs today. We're so full of technology and so it's very important that those people who are seeking to become ritual leaders, that there is a resource for healthy mentorship out there. And I just encourage anybody who feels that calling to step into this role, that you just keep seeking and discerning who that healthy mentor is for you. And don't stick around if you get a red flag, you know, that says, wait a minute, you know, I'm witnessing that there's harm being done to people here. I'm witnessing that this person is really just into the self-glorification of the role. I'm witnessing misuse of power. You know, okay, you don't need to stay in that circle if that's happening. I had an experience where I went into this ceremony for women who were reclaiming our wildness and healing sexual abuse, body contracted, you know, places in us. And the leader of that ceremony came from a long line of healers from southern Italy, and she had an incredible presence. She could sing the songs and say the prayers and She was actually doing the same performance, you could call it, on stage, you know, as a performance for an audience. But here she was leading us in a very real ceremony, you know, where we were invited to really hand over our will, our power, and be led by her into the spirit world and receive healing and then come out. And so I went into this, and I at first I was like, okay, I'll go halfway and then I'm going to stop myself because I don't know this woman. I'm meeting her for the first time, and you know, I'll get a little bit of healing, but I'm not going to go full out. Well, halfway through my experience, this woman is saying, no, there's more in there. You must go further. I see you. You know, I'm like, oh, she sees me. Oh, she can tell I'm holding back, you know, and there's the part of me that wants to be seen, you know, it's like,
right,
oh, okay. Right. Maybe I can trust her, even though she's almost too flamboyant. Okay, but I'll go for it, you know, and so I went for it, and I am, you know, I'm a medium. I was born a medium. At that point in my life, I had never had a full trance mediumship experience where beings came in and took over my body. So that's what happened. And they were all very powerful, supernatural deity beings, unexpected, scary for me. I just kept saying, yes, this is healing. I'm safe. She's standing there drumming for me. Okay, I can do this. My body did things that aren't even humanly possible, right? And she realized at some point she was in over her head, and she brought me back out, she thought, you know, trying to have me follow the drumbeat back into my body, et cetera. Once I was, you know, complete, I had no use of my legs at all. I couldn't stand. I had to drag myself out of the center of the circle. People poured ice water over my head, and it was all I could do to stay conscious. Within 10 minutes, the ritual ended, and the circle was disbanded because another group was coming in to use the space.
Mm.
And the leader of the ritual immediately went to sell her CDs. Nobody came and asked me if I was okay.
Mm.
Everybody left, and the professor I was with, who was hosting this ritual leader, just basically said, hey, could you make sure, you know, it's all cleaned up for the next group? Okay, bye. And everybody drove off, and I was lying there.
Wow.
I immediately got a high fever for 4 days, vomiting, et cetera, et cetera. I had to get on an airplane and fly home. In that state, I was dismembered for a week at least. And the professor I was working with never talked to me. She wouldn't respond to my outreach. So this is just a very extreme, gross example of,
right,
of the negligence that I've seen out there and experienced out there.
Well, Maria, you have a certification program from which people can receive training in doing ritual work. And we have just a few minutes left, but I'd like you to talk about that program. And then you're going to make us an offer here today regarding some of your work. So would you talk about the certification program and then move into the author offer? We have about 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Well, as you can imagine, the culmination of my life's work has manifested in this school, in Sacred Future, and because I've led ritual and ceremony and study group process and facilitation and leadership and psychology for 20 years, it's time for a program that can be the resource for people who feel called to be authentic, grounded, you know, leaders and ritual leaders and cultural ritual specialists for their communities. And so I base the program, the certification is a 5-month certification, and it's really geared towards, you know, of course, people who feel that deep inner call. But a lot of us because we've witnessed so much misuse of power, and maybe we've been through a number of community circles where we got burned, we have a fear of stepping into a circle or being that leader ourselves. And so there's a lot of confidence building through connecting to our own authentic voice and knowledge and wisdom as leaders. There's no cookie cutter, you know, of this is what it is to be, you know, a healthy leader. The healthy leader is the healthy individual, the healthy person. And that comes from knowing your shadow. That comes from honesty, self-honesty. It comes from self-compassion, and then that spills over and wanting to be of service to your community. And so most of our students tend to be healers who are looking for healthy mentorship, and coaches, and psychotherapists, and moms, you know, people who are moving on into their elderhood phase of life, and they're done with the career, and they're ready to be, really step into that that seat of honor and elderhood in their life, being so the one.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have just a couple minutes left. Can you tell us how to get in touch with you for that program? And then I'd like to have you share the offer that you were telling me about.
Yes. So you can contact me if you are interested in the Nature Therapy and Rites of Passage Certification Program. And it is a combination of in-person and distance. So it's convenient for those traveling. And you can go to www.sacredfuture.org, so sacredfuture.org. And once you get to that website, what you're going to see is a button that basically it says, I want to cash in on my free gift from listening to Maria on Lifeboat Hour. And so if you, it's very simple, right? Press that button, and what I want to give everybody who wants to receive my gift is a one-page ritual outline for what I call a white bath. And this is allying ourselves with the element of water for deep, deep, deep spiritual cleansing in mind, body, and spirit. And so it's a spiritual cleansing bath. It's very simple, but it's very powerful. And so anybody who feels a stuckness, negative energy around them, maybe they're a sensitive person that absorbs other people's emotional, you know, patterns, and you need to clean that off at the end of the day. So go ahead and go to sacredfuture.org, and you can download that that gift, that outline.
Oh, thank you so much for that. It's been lovely to hear you speak about your experiences and about ritual and about nature. It's so heartwarming. And I thank you so much for the work you're doing in the world. And thank you for coming on the Lifeboat Hour. Maria Gutierrez at MariaOwl.com. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much.
And we'll talk to everybody next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor. The rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied.